All right, if you have your Bibles, let's open up to Luke chapter 8. The Jesus tour continues, everyone. If you've been following along with us, whether you've been at home following along on the live stream or whether you've been here, you know that in Luke chapter 8, Jesus pulls up with his followers and Luke gives us this introduction saying Jesus is going to go from city to city and village to village in the northern part of Israel, around the Sea of Galilee, in the Decapolis, up in the Golan Heights, all that region. He's going to go on that. And scholars have kind of termed chapter 8 and 9 the Jesus tour, the tour section of the Gospel of Luke. And it begins with the parable of the seeds, or the parable of the soils, where on this tour, there's going to be various receptions of Jesus, different soils that he's going to come into. And then it goes on to tell a number of stories about Jesus going to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. He calms a storm. He meets Crazy Larry. You guys remember Crazy Larry? Not our own Larry Tierney, but the man of the tombs, right? And he heals him of all of the demons. He releases him of all the demons. Then the demons do what demons do, which is destroy all the things that they go into, like the pigs, and they run them into the water. And the people there are like, hey, Jesus, you just totally disrupted our economy. We're sending you back. We don't want you here. And so Crazy Larry, though, is like, I want to go. And Jesus says, no, tell everybody what I've done over here. And we're going to see later on, Jesus is going to come back, and Crazy Larry's going to show up with a bunch of friends. So anyway, but as he comes back to the western shore of the Sea of Galilee, that's where we pick up our story today as the Jesus tour continues. Look at chapter 8 and verse 40. This story is awesome. And if I can give it 1% of how awesome this story is, I will have done my job. But this story is amazing, an amazing encounter with Jesus. Luke chapter 8 and verse 40. Now when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus, who was a ruler of the synagogue, and falling at Jesus' feet, he implored him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter, about 12 years old. She was dying. And as Jesus went, the people pressed around him. Luke wants to make a major point in the entirety of his gospel that a response to Jesus that is appropriate is a response of faith. And we're going to see over and over that Luke will highlight different people's faith. Among the followers of Jesus, faith is the rule, but it takes so many different forms, and there's so many people and so many points of process around Jesus. And as we look at Jairus, we recognize that he was a man of faith. Jairus begins with a faith that takes a risk. Jesus has had an up and down relationship with the Jewish leaders of the day, right? And Jairus is a leader of a local synagogue. He is known as a ruler of the synagogue. It probably meant not necessarily that he was a Pharisee or a Sadducee or part of the Sanhedrin, but he was a local civic leader who was responsible for the weekly service of the synagogue, what the readings were going to be, what the order of service was going to be. If he had planning center, he would have put all that stuff in there. He would have chosen the songs. Planning center is what we use, everybody. So get this all together. It takes a village to put the service on. Jairus was a guy who did that. And he would have been friends with all the local rabbis, all the local Pharisees, all the Jews who came into the synagogue. He would have known all of those people. Jesus had a touch-and-go relationship with the Jewish religious leaders and the establishment synagogue people. But Jairus had heard, no doubt, what Jesus had taught. The Jesus podcast, if you will, right? And what he had seen, what Jesus had done. He no doubt had heard about the tour and maybe even what went on the other side of the lake. He's heard about all that stuff. And his daughter is sick and Jairus must make a decision. Will he go to Jesus? It seems like Jairus waited to the last minute. Because by the time he gets to Jesus, it's minutes matter, right, in this story. By the time he gets there, he knows his daughter's sick, but his daughter is dying. His daughter is about to die. And he waits. It's faith, but it is a last-minute faith. And it's urgent. And I'm not saying that's bad. That's good. That is good faith, everybody. That is good faith. Jairus comes to Jesus in good faith. Minutes will matter, but still, it's faith. And what Jairus does, a community leader, a respected man of the synagogue, a leader of the synagogue, in the dirt of the street, in front of a crowd of people from his town, falls on his knees in front of Jesus. Look, if that's not faith, I don't know what is. That's a risk. That's a risk of reputation, and he is in the dirt on his knees in front of Jesus. That is faith. That's a faith to emulate. That is faith. The text doesn't say what Jairus says to Jesus. It must have sounded something like, "My daughter is sick. She's dying. She's of the age of betrothal. She's almost 12 years old. Her whole life is in front of her. She's a joy to us, and she's our only daughter. Please, come to my house. You can do something." And I think we just want to pause, as we've already done, and just recognize Jairus is an example of faith. He's a model of faith that we can emulate no matter what is going on in our lives. The appropriate response is to come to Jesus, fall down, and ask. We're going to see when Jesus talks about prayer in chapter 11, what teach us to pray. And Jesus is like, if you want to pray, here's a parable all about asking. Ask, ask, ask. Jairus does. At the risk of his own reputation, at the risk of the relationships he has in the synagogue, Jairus had faith. He had an urgent faith. And we don't hear anything else except that Jesus begins to go with Jairus. Now, in this story, what we're going to see is that everyone starts with good faith, and the call that Jesus has for them is to deepen their faith. Jesus is going to ask them to go another level in depth of their faith. Jairus has good faith. And as Jesus starts to go with them, we are reintroduced to the crowd. And this is where we start to understand that the crowd, they welcome Jesus, but they begin to become an impediment. It says that the crowd pressed around him. A little bit more on that later. Jairus might be leading the way. As we think about this scene, Jairus is leading the way, and the crowd doesn't care about Jairus. He can make a room as much as he wants. They want to be around Jesus. And so as he's making a way, the crowd is still pressing around Jesus. They've heard about the Jesus tour, and they want to be a stop on the Jesus tour. And so Jairus is making a way. Jesus has been on the other side of the lake, calming storms, casting out demons into herds of pigs. And this crowd had waited on the docks for him. They wanted to be part of the tour. So they were swarming him and pressing on him. You can imagine Jairus, Peter, James, John, the sons of thunder, Peter. There's probably some yelling. I don't know if you've ever been in a crowd trying to make it through urgently. It's a matter of life and death. There's probably some pushing, some yelling, some crowd control. And in the midst of that scene, in the crowd, on the fringes, quietly, unobtrusively, there's a woman. And she's following, not in front of the action, but behind the action. She needed to stay out of sight. She had a reputation in the community, not that she was immoral, but that she was unclean. Luke 8:43, if you look, there was a woman, she had a flow of blood for 12 years. And though she had spent all her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. The Greeks, in Greek, it describes a woman being in the flow of blood. And being in the flow of blood, that idiom in Hebrew, is an idiomatic way of saying she had some sort of menstrual bleeding. And in this case, it had been going on for over a decade. As long as Jairus' daughter had been alive, she had had this issue. Now, according to Leviticus, this one probably did not make your memory verse or the Hobby Lobby decoration in your house. Leviticus 15:25, if a woman has a flow of blood for many days, not at the time of her menstrual impurity, or if she has a flow beyond the time of her impurity, all the days of the flow she shall continue in uncleanness. As in the days of her impurity, she shall be unclean. Every bed on which she lies, Leviticus gets pumped up here, every bed on which she lies, all the days of her flow shall to her be a bed of impurity. And everything on which she sits shall be unclean. Not 1 year, not two, but for a whole decade plus. Where would this woman live? Who would this woman be around? We encountered the leper. This woman is essentially a leper without leprosy in her community. And so she's used to laying low and being unseen, keeping out of sight, trying to be in, but staying really on the fringes. She could not lay on a bed, sit on a chair without making it unclean. Not to mention the discomfort, the anemia, the loss of energy, the loss of friends, the loss of family. She also had heard about the Jesus tour. And she believed that he could do something for her. So she ventured out around the crowds, on the fringes, staying forever on the fringes, out of sight as much as she could. She snuck up on Jesus. Not an easy thing if you think about it, right? She snuck up on Jesus. She didn't grab his cloak. She just was going for the fringe. Perhaps she was thinking, I don't want him to be unclean. I could make him unclean. But I've heard he can make the unclean clean. On the fringe. Stay out of sight. Stay down. Stay behind him. Just the fringe. The word fringe, by the way, is the same word in Greek as the word tassel. And there was rabbis, rabbis would have tassels on the corners of their garment. And maybe her thought is, if I can just touch the tassel, all I want is the tassel. So she sneaks up on Jesus. She touches the tassel. And it worked. She had fringe faith. Okay, I'm. Thank you, everybody. Fringe faith. Jairus had urgent faith. She had fringe faith. It worked. And the text simply says immediately the flow of blood stopped. Something changed. She could tell immediately that something had happened. And she then snuck away, slinking down, staying low, out of sight. Now, what comes next in the text? What comes next? I don't even know what to do or even where to begin. I don't even know how to even start this section, okay? But I'll start with this. We don't often get moments in the Gospels where Jesus is authentically surprised. But this seems to be a moment where Jesus authentically is surprised and asks a question he does not know the answer to. Who touched me? He's focused This urgent, this man's daughter is dying. He grabs him out of a crowd, all this commotion around him, pressing in. He's trying to make it through. Peter's talking, James and John, they're talking, make a way, make a way. Jairus is like, look, it's this way, it's this way. And all of a sudden, Jesus stops and he's like, who touched me? I don't even know. I mean, okay, it's an amazing thought about what exactly is going on. Who touched me? And then I love Peter, who is probably losing his mind at this point, trying to clear a path. He turns to Jesus and says, Jesus, everyone is touching you. Everyone is touching you. Just come. We might mend some fences with the synagogue community, right? If we do, like Peter's thinking this, whatever he's thinking, everyone's touching you. But Jesus says, no, Peter, someone touched me and I felt power go out from me. Now again, I don't know all the things about the hypostatic union, how God is in human flesh and all the things, or whether it was, you know, it was you have one person, two natures, and maybe it's the divine nature knows everything and the human nature is asking questions it doesn't know the answer to. I like to think of it kind of as like if it's all omniscience, everything in the whole world, all the knowledge. We just played trivia last night. Okay, I wish I had all knowledge. But imagine processing that through a human brain. It's like doing the update on your computer, new software on old hardware. You push a button and it like takes some time to process. Sometimes I think that's kind of how Jesus is focused, and there are times where when he's focused, he has access to all that knowledge, but in this moment, it seems like he's authentically surprised. But you can imagine as he then changes focus, okay, who touched me? But she's keeping low, and he's like, he's kind of zeroing in on her, like he's starting to focus on who she is and what has happened. And this woman, trying now desperately to stay out of sight, faith for the fringes is now going to be challenged to deepen her faith. She's going to be challenged to come out from the shadows, fight the fear of the crowd, even the possibility of rebuke of Jesus. Had she made him unclean by touching him? Had she sullied his reputation, the exact opposite of what she wanted to do? But she's being called from the fringes now to bring her faith front and center. And her faith fights that fear, and she does exactly what Jairus did initially. In the dirt of the streets, in front of a crowd of people who knew exactly who she was, she falls down on her knees in front of Jesus, and she tells her story. When the woman, this is verse 47, saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him, and how she had been immediately healed. And then Jesus says something that he has never said anywhere else in any of the Gospels. He addresses her in a way that he addresses no other person in any other gospel story. He calls her daughter. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Now, we've heard Jesus say, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. If you remember back to the story of the woman who weeps over Jesus' feet at the dinner at Simon the Pharisee's house, he turns to her and says, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. He said that before, but he has never addressed another person as daughter. She's actually probably older than Jesus if she's been dealing with this for full 12 years. And I think this is my guess. Why daughter? Jairus has a daughter. I'm going to heal a daughter. The crowd's pressing in. I'm going to heal a daughter. Who touched me? And when he sees her, all he can think is, well, this was the daughter. This was the daughter I was called to. She's someone's daughter. Daughter, your faith has made you well. I don't have magical clothes on. This woman's name, by the way, we don't know her name. She's an unnamed woman. Later on in the second century, the church gives her a name, the name Bernice, which is Bernice, but Bernice sounds better. And in Latin, it's Veronica, the name Veronica. That's the traditional name. But Jesus says, I don't have, the implication is he's saying, I don't have magical garments on. Your faith in me has made you well. This is not about some magical tassel on the end of my garment. You came because you believed that I could do something, and I can, and I have, and I will. And also, I just want you to know, Veronica, I didn't come just so people could brush up against my clothes. I came to hold them in my hands and call them daughter. I didn't come so you could slink away and we'd never see each other again. I came to have an encounter with you. Your faith is great, but I don't want a faith that shrinks away and stays on the fringes. I want a faith that knows that I see you and I love you. And I will stop whatever I'm doing to make sure you know that. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Shalom, go in peace and wholeness. Go be reunited with your family, with your friends. You are clean, you are well, you are whole. Go to synagogue, worship the Lord. You are in shalom. And even as Jesus is saying shalom, someone comes running up to Jairus. Your daughter is dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore. Now, I don't know how that reads. Sometimes when we read a passage, we just kind of go over it. But when you hear that, that is, well, let me pause for a second. Earlier on, when Jesus gets off the boat, it talks about a crowd. There's a great crowd that's welcoming him. And then in verse 3, it says that the crowd is pressing in on him. Now, here, do you remember at the beginning of the Jesus tour, the very beginning of the Jesus tour, Jesus tells a parable, the parable of the soils. The verb that is used for the crowd pressing in on Jesus is the same verb that is used for the weeds choking out the seed. And in this story, Luke wants us to know that the crowd is actually, the crowd is weeds. They are an impediment to getting to Jairus' daughter. They are an impediment to the woman coming out. It's fear of the crowd. It's fear of the weeds. She overcomes the fear. The weeds threaten. The weeds will threaten. The weeds threaten her that she's only going to have a chance encounter and then get out of there. Jesus finds her and is like, no. We're doing some weeding and we're going to have a moment. But here, Jairus, as Jesus is saying, your faith has made you well, go in peace, your daughter is dead. Don't bother Jesus anymore with your request. That is a weed, everybody. That is a weed that you have probably experienced even in your own life, in your own prayer life. Why would God even care about this? Why would I bring this to him again? Is he even listening? That's a weed. And the weed here, this is not the last weed in the story. But that is, the crowd is the weeds. And Jairus is now, who comes to Jesus in good faith, his faith is now going to have to go from an urgent faith to a new kind of depth of patience in his faith. He is going to have to wait on the Lord. He is now going to have to wait for Jesus to do something in his own timing. Don't bother the teacher anymore. It's too late. He called her a daughter, your daughter is dead. And Jesus, if you look in the passage, in verse 50, Jesus is like, on hearing this, he answered him, "Do not fear, only believe, she will be well." It's almost like Jesus turns to Jairus and says, "Jairus, stay with me. Stay with me. We are surrounded by weeds. Stay with me. I hear you. I'm going to your house. Let's go." Don't. The fear is there. The fear is a weed. We have to overcome the weeds, and we've got to get to your house. Have faith. You've got to believe. I'm asking you, would you deepen your faith for me? I see you. I hear you. I'm coming. You know, on the Jesus tour, when Jesus is going across to see Crazy Larry, Man of the Tombs, he's on the Sea of Galilee, and there's a big storm, and he calms the storm. When he lands and he meets the Man of the Tombs, all the demons come, and Jesus is outnumbered. Jesus casts them out into the pigs. They destroy the pigs, but Jesus has power over the demons. The woman with the issue of blood has an illness. Jesus conquers the illness. And now he's on his way to conquer death. At the end of the tour, the question is going to be, who do you say that I am? Authority over nature, authority over the demons, authority over sickness, authority over death. Who do you say that I am? Luke is painting a picture for us here. And Jesus is on his way, and Jairus is like, people are telling him, don't bother the teacher anymore, and he's like, all right, I'm going to stay with Jesus. Let's do this. Let's go. Let's go. When they arrive at Jairus' house, look at 8:52, all were weeping and mourning for her, but he said, do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him. That's weeds, everybody. If you've ever been laughed at or made fun of for your faith, or if you've heard people laughing at Jesus or ridiculing, that's weeds. That's weeds. They laughed at Jesus. Don't bother the teacher anymore. It's too late. And even when he does show up, they laugh at him. 8:54, but taking her by the hand, he called, saying, child, arise. And her spirit returned, and she got up at once, and he directed that something should be given her to eat, probably to show that she is indeed alive. And her parents were amazed, as you might imagine. But he charged them to tell no one what had happened. Jesus restores, he deepens Jairus' faith, and they overcome the weeds. And they round out Luke's picture of Jesus. Authority over the nature, over the spiritual world, over illness, and over death. And Jairus answers the call to deepen his faith for patience. Patience for Jesus to do what he's going to do. What only he can do in his own time. And as we come to the end of this passage, I just want to ask, I think what Luke invites us into is just, where are you in your journey of faith? If you're here, I'm kind of preaching to the choir. You're here probably because you're like, yeah, I love Jesus, right? I've come here because I've had that initial good faith call in Jesus, but there still might be a sense in which, look, when I first came to faith, I was 14 years old. I prayed on my bed. I didn't tell anybody. I just started going to church and I didn't tell you. It's kind of like the woman on the fringes. I was just like, I'm just going to hang out, see what happens, right? And eventually I started to talk about my faith and to tell people, oh yeah, this is what I did. And it is this call to step out in faith and to deepen your faith. I think one of the cool things we had at our men's breakfast yesterday Larry Tierney shared his testimony, his life story, and I think just the idea of like that tie, like bringing all of those things to talk about all of those things out loud, it might have been, and even as I was talking with like Steve and Andrew, like some of those things they had never heard before. And for Larry to actually, I know I'm probably embarrassing Larry, sorry Larry, but you're a great example. So anyway, so you know, put up with me making you a great example, okay? The idea is that like he came and he put his faith out there. It wasn't just quiet. And the 30 guys that were there locked in. Just a chance to like, yes, this is, God is at work in every moment of my life. I didn't know it before, but I'm putting the dots together. And stepping out in faith gives an opportunity. That woman coming forward and putting that out there, that's an opportunity for her faith. And just to ask the question, like, where are you at with Jesus? Maybe you've been, and look, it's good faith. Jairus coming, the woman coming initially, that's all good faith. But there are these kind of depth of faith things that continue on. There might be a call to go from a quiet faith to a more outspoken faith. There might be a call to go from an urgent faith to a waiting faith. All of those things, that's all good faith. But in a room like this, I would imagine that God has called all of us into different points of our faith. Maybe you are in a point where you, look, if you're in a point in your faith where you're like, all I want to do is try to sneak up on Jesus and grab the hem of his garment. That's all I just want to touch the hem. Good. That is good faith. That is, I just want to know a little bit. That's good faith. Maybe you're at a point where you're just, something urgent is in your life and you're like, I don't know if I should take this to Jesus, but you're like, I'm just going to fall down in front of him and just put it all out in front of him, just like Jairus did. That is great faith. Some of you guys have been praying for something for years, maybe even decades. And that kind of waiting faith, Jesus looks at that and is like, hey, stay with me. Stay with me. I'm with you. We're doing this together. I'm coming to your house. It's just not right now. Stay with me. I don't know where you're at and what you're processing right now in your faith, but in a room like this, I would imagine there's lots of things, spoken and unspoken, that we are just coming to Jesus and saying, Jesus, I need you to do something, and I'm going to wait for you to do it. I'm going to ask for you to do it because I know you and you alone can do it. That's good faith. And when we look at the Gospel of Luke, the unnamed woman, Veronica, and Jairus, what I love is they probably didn't know each other before, but they can't tell their stories apart from each other anymore. For 2,000 years, you can't tell Jairus' story without telling Veronica's story, and you can't tell Veronica's story without telling Jairus' story, and they have somehow found a way that their stories of faith have intertwined in a way that can never, ever be separated. And we only know her story because of his, and his story because of hers, and their story because of Jesus. And my hope in a room like this is simply that as you are waiting on the Lord, you might find yourself intertwined with another story, someone who might pray with you, someone who might partner with you in prayer, someone who might let you know you're not alone in this. Jesus has walked with me. He'll walk with you. Stay with me. Stay with me. We're in this together. I know there's weeds. Let's do some weeding. Let's work it together. That's what we're here for. We're going to weed this stuff out, and we're going to make it for the long haul. Jesus is worth it. We're going to do this together. I'm going to invite the worship team to come on up. One of the great things that we get an opportunity to do today is just to participate in the Lord's Supper. And it's our opportunity to say, look, Jesus, it's better to have Jesus in me than not, right? That we come together and Jesus says at the end of his life, he comes and says, hey, what I want you to do is I want you to remember what I have done for you. And the way we're going to remember that, the way we're going to renew the covenant is I am going to give my life, but the night before he does that, he says, look, this is my body, which is broken for you, the bread, and this is the cup the new covenant in my blood. This is what I'm doing. I'm renewing the covenant on the very night that I am being betrayed, that the very night that the covenant is being broken, I'm going to renew it. And Jesus is like, I am in it for the long haul with you. And so we celebrate once a month together. I got those. Thank you, Dave. That we have an opportunity to simply symbolically say, I want Christ in me. I want to be with Jesus. I want to trust him. This is an act of faith. And I want to trust that the things that I'm asking him for, he sees me, he knows me, he knows I'm his daughter, he knows that I'm his son, and he's not overlooking me. He's not just on the way to something else as he encounters me. So let me pray, and then after we pray, I'll have you come forward. Our practice here is take the cups. There's two cups. The bread's on the bottom. The juice is on the top. Take it back to your seat, and what will happen is after everybody has been served, I will come back up, and I'll walk us through together taking the bread and the cup together. So let me pray. Father, we are so grateful for your son, Jesus. Jesus, we welcome you here. We invite you into this room, into our hearts, to do the work that you want to do in us. And now as we come to you, would you just remind us of the things that we're trusting you for? And would you give us the faith that we need and the encouragement we need to continue in that work? And we pray in your name. Amen. As you're ready, you can come forward and take